pause the YouTube clip I'd been watching. "They're so cute," I said. "Look at their little trotters in the water." "You do know those piglets grow into enormous porkers that the owners don't want and abandon. You're such a killjoy. I suppose it's better than those pet adoption websites you keep looking at, even though you know you can't have a dog." I discreetly closed the pages of pooches I'd been browsing earlier. Why couldn't Dad be allergic to leaves or grass instead of animal fur? And switch back to the document I was meant to be working on. I suppose I could write a feature about the abandoned pigs? "It's been done." Charlie sat opposite, his grin as bright and sunny as the weather outside. "How do you think I knew about their plight?" "Because you're a know-all?" "Unfair!" He flapped a hand in front of his eyes as if to quell tears, then rested his elbows on the table. "If that were true, I'd know why you're still working for that boring paper instead of, say, Paris Match." "Paris Match is too much like Hello Magazine," I argued, which wasn't really the point. "It's not the right fit for me." The truth was, when I'd started writing for the Expat's Guide to Living and Working in France, I hadn't envisaged I'd still be doing it a year later. Admittedly, my contribution had proved quite popular once I'd started injecting some personality into my column. From experience, driving at 130 miles per hour on a French autoroute is going to get you in trouble. Remember, speed signs are in kilometres, not miles. And don't drive on the left. But my real dream was to work for a famous magazine, where I'd have my own desk, attend meetings and interview A-list stars, specifically Magnifique, the country's best-selling glossy, owned by editor-in-chief Nicolas Julliard and published in several languages. "Hey, I've got a good headline." Charlie made popping motions with his fingers. "Why I while away my days in Ile-de-Ré's most popular cafe." By Natalie Bright. "What's with the hands? It's your name in lights. That's only for Broadway stars." "You know what I mean," Charlie grinned. "Anyway, a feature like that could easily be made into a Broadway show." "A show about me escaping my father's midlife crisis while pretending I'm not having a quarter-life one of my own," I managed to chuckle. "I don't think so, Charlie. Plus, I've written about your cafe enough already." "Not that we need the publicity," he said, eyeing the bustling interior and the tables outside on the pavement. It was true that the Café Bellevue was busy all year round, partly due to its picturesque location, but mostly because of the warm welcome and homely atmosphere and the delicious cakes and pastries baked by Charlie's mum, Dolly. I'd put on half a stone since arriving on the island and discovering the cafe, a 5-minute walk away from where Dad lived. "Shouldn't you be working?" I grumbled, peering at the counter where Dolly was stacking a display of buttery croissants while glancing surreptitiously at us from beneath her neat blonde fringe. "She sent you over, didn't she?" "I don't need an excuse to come and chat to my bestie." "Don't say bestie. You're not a 14-year-old girl." "Okay, my best friend, then." Despite the buzz of chat and clatter of mismatched china, Dolly seemed to freeze, as if she'd overheard, even though we were 4 tables away. She couldn't understand why Charlie and I weren't a couple and was baffled as to why it was taking us so long to realise we were perfect for each other, like the plot of a Nicholas Sparks movie. It was true that Charlie and I had clicked the day I entered the cafe and blearily requested caffeine and something sugary to eat. Seeming to read my mood, he'd instructed me to sit exactly where I was now. "It has the best view of the harbour," before bringing over a bowl-sized mug of milky coffee and the lightest, tastiest pair of pain au chocolat to ever grace my taste buds. "How did you know I'd want to?" I'd asked, making light work of them while he sat opposite, exactly where he was now, watching with smiling eyes. It should have been creepy, but felt oddly natural, which I'd put down to him being a fellow Brit, but was actually to do with him being so at ease with himself. "No one can just eat one," he'd said, with great authority. "And you look like you hadn't had breakfast." It was true, I hadn't. And once introductions had been made, I'd found myself telling him about how I'd lost my job in London when the magazine I'd worked for had folded, and that my long-term relationship had crumbled not long afterwards. So I decided to come to Chamillon, on the Ile-de-Ré, to live with my dad while I worked out what to do.